I've been asked tonight to speak about lucky numbers. Are there any superstitious people in the audience? Yeah. Superstition means building things onto things that don't belong on them. Lucky numbers. I'm going to take it seriously now. I can dismiss Benny Hill for a moment. I am going to talk about lucky numbers. First, I must define lucky. This is tremendously important. It means the capacity to be in the right place at the right time and to be able to utilize the opportunities there in consent. That's the only kind of luck there is. If you're not alert, even if there is the right time and the right place, in the right conditions, if you're not alert to them, you're not lucky. So to get lucky, we have to wake up. Are we awake? Right. Loki in the North system and locality are related. And it is capacity for seeing the right moment to do a certain act, the moment that's favorable to it, a here and now of immediate application. Now we look at the word number. Notice that lovely English word in it, N-U-M-B. Those of you who remember your math beginning know that when you present a mathematical problem to Mr. Average, his brain immediately seizes it up. Do you remember? I mean, a mathematical equation staggers everybody except the mathematician. The brain goes numb. Now, if you take the B off it and use num, N-U-M, that is a very, very charming word because it means a motion of power in a substance. A motion of power in a substance, N-U-M. Now, when power moves in something, the substance changes its form and mode of activity. And each number has a peculiar mode of activity proper to itself and dissimilar from other modes. So we are to think about number as relative motion of power within substances, and each characteristic differs from another motion in a substance. In fact, the NUM is another form of triple F: force, form, function, the indivisible triad, the force, the form, the function. Force is your will, form is your intellect, function is your activity, what you do with it when you apply your will and your intellect. They are involved in that lovely word, num. Now if you reverse it, it becomes M-U-N, moon. You know, there's an organization called Mooney, and that Mooney, M-U-N-I, is a nice old Indian word for a wise person. And it means a person who can count accurately the characteristic motions constituting a substance. The constitution of a substance by characteristic motion. If that is known thoroughly to you, you are a Mooney. Now you know the Latin munire means to defend, the passage in the word munition, to defend. And you know that communication is not possible with another being unless you are able to show them that they can increase their power of self-defense by accepting the proposition you offer. So, idea involved. N-U-M-M-U-N means the same as triple F: force, form, function. These three are indivisible, like thought, feeling, and will are. You can stress one more than the other, but you cannot get rid of any of the three. When you think, you feel that you're thinking and you're willing to think. When you will, you are initiating a process determined by prior thought and feeling. When you feel, you are evaluating the amount of power in your will and the amount of form in your intellect. So the rule is, do not divide the substance. Do not confound the person. Force, form, and function are inseparable. We've all got them. And we deceive ourselves frequently into thinking they're separable when they are not. And we do this because, in fact, we are able to superstress one or the other. We don't get rid of the others, but we can superstress. I can focus on thought, like a well-bred aquarian, and ignore my impulsive ramificality of the Aryan type. I can be aesthetic and evaluate a Picasso or some other artist that I prefer. I prefer a person who called Craig. So that's a bias in the geometrical aspect of my mind. They are never separable, but we can superstress them so much that we forget the ones that we are not focusing on. We can focus very hard and behave like an intellectual. We can focus very hard on our aesthetic sense and be an exquisite appreciator of the arts, music, painting, and so on. And we can focus on the will to initiate change without regard to our thoughts and feelings. So that when we stress, it is our will to stress that causes our trouble. And this stress means two stresses. You know, purity of heart is the will, one thing. If you can will one thing, there's no contradiction in you, and providing the odds external to you are not too great, you must fulfill your purpose. We now start with the numbers. We're going to deal with 1 to 7, because they're rather basic numbers. They correspond with 7 aspects of the human psyche. They are also used symbolically under the names of the 7 planets, which are not referring to those objects in the sky, but to the universal field of power which precipitated those planets. We'll start with the number 1, and you observe immediately that the number 1 is spelled with 3 letters. In English, in French, in the female at least, in German, in Italian, and so on, we find 3 letters, as in the Hebrew, 3 letters put together mean 1. And why do they mean 1? We've already said 1. You cannot separate the triple F, force, form, function. So if 1 is there, the 3 are there. So the problem is raised. If oneness has 3 aspects, namely thought and form and function, how are you going to make sure that you do not forget those 3 aspects so that you can operate from them immediately in perfect balance? Now, some of the great mystics of the 17th century insisted on what they call the temperament. Now, temperament means balance. Most people popularly think temperament means unbalanced. Oh, he's temperamental. That means he can be knocked off balance. It's the exact opposite. The word temperament, like the word tempering in steel, means to put a thing into its best condition. When you temper a thing, you will heat it up and you will plunge it into water or oil or some other fluid. And you'll make it so that it compacts itself together and attains a unity that it didn't have before. Now, to get this unity, we actually have to practice watching our own internal conditions in which we think reflectively. That is, to think that we think. Not just to think, but to think that we think. Not just to will, but to will that we will. Not just to feel aesthetically, but to feel that we feel. We must make everything reflective. Reflective will, reflective feeling, reflective thinking are very powerful, because the reflection makes them into a unity like that we find when we temper steel. Without tempering, that steel will not be very good in a battle. Those of you who know the art of making samurai swords by folding and banging and folding and banging, and it finally results in a very peculiar unity of flexibility, of strength, of cutting edge, all at once in one sword. Now we need that kind of mind, a mind that can think about thinking, think about feeling, think about willing. A heart that can feel about thinking, feel about feeling, feel about willing. A will that can will about thinking, will to feel, will to will. When we get this, we've got a magical nine, haven't we? Who said, Mathematician in the front row. Actually, yes, she said no, but she said, a manager has a very successful business that now owns half a Twitter. All lies. A lie is something laid down for some purpose, don't worry about it. And never care whether the lie is a truth or a falsity. If it's a truth, useful. If it's a falsity, it will let you down and enable you to have your next lesson. I apologize, yes. You should have let me finish my apology. Apology is only saying words on top of the situation to cover it up. Beware of apologies. Apologues. Back to one. Now, if we don't get oneness in our lives and what we do, we are bound, like tied up, to fail. We are bound, if we don't get unity, to think with a stress which ignores feeling and will. Or we feel with a stress which ignores thinking and willing, or we will with a stress which ignores thinking and feeling. So we are bound to be unsuccessful if we don't get unity. Unity is all we need. If we get unity, we have a very funny thing that goes with it. Would you like it? Yes, you would like it. It's omniscience, omnipotence, and omnipresence. You think that's a big order, but it isn't really, because in actual fact, the human mind and soul knows the world that it knows only because that world is inside it. So it's no bigger than you are when you are reflective. The world that you see apparently outside you is a projection of your intention that there be a world. And David has put me this instrument here. So if I felt like drawing, which I probably won't, on principle, I could do so. Now, he projected that here. He didn't ask me if I wanted it tonight. He told me I've got a pencil of words, a thin one and a thick one. Very nice. That's his projection. But he read my intention. So it's both our projections. The world we live in is a construct of all our intentionality. Every one of us is contributing into a vast, I'd say infinite, field of sentient power. We're projecting into thoughts, feelings and wills. And the totality of all these is the universe. And when we examine it, we will never find anything in it other than that which we are projecting in it in order to find it. In Hindu philosophy, that's called Maya. M-A-Y-A, Maya. Actually means appetital affirmation. Ma for appetite, Ya for affirmation. Maya. Appetital affirmation. That means you cannot see anything unless you have the appetite to see it. Anybody who'd like to prove that wrong, stand up and prove it now or forever. Hold cultists. Can you do it? Can you imagine yourself examining the world without an intent to see something? And without a bias to prefer this other than that? Nobody can do it. It is true that we project the world when we examine the world. It is very important in what? Quantum theory? Subatomic physics? Is there a hand up there? An avalanche. Is the person also deaf and lacking in the sense of feeling on the skin? You've got a funny person there. What kind is it? Is he blind, deaf, dumb, with no sense of smell and no capacity for feeling vibration? I saw a very interesting film not very long ago about the girl who's deaf, who conducts by vibration. You see her? By vibration. The universe is vibration. If a person has a back to an avalanche when it comes, that person is ignoring it.
But it's still there.
What is? It's there because it's being ignored. You know that ignorance means willful disregard. It doesn't mean nothing. It means willful disregard. When I was in Switzerland on one occasion, I had the good fortune to see a friend of mine buried in a small avalanche. I say my good fortune, but I saw it. I wasn't in it. Now, it was very educational. It made me very careful. You know, it gave me ears to listen for a little swearing sound. And I did not ignore it. If a bird went, I thought, what's what I'm wrong? Now, when you turn your head and look backwards like that in case, that is the exact meaning of the word respect. Respect means look back at. And if you've been hit hard enough, often enough, but not too hard, if you survive the blow, you're alerted in a way that you're not before. Have you studied Berkeley's subjective idealism? Yes?
I know
a bit about it. Well, to be is to be perceived. And that's how, so he says. Well, he's a very good deep Irish ecclesiastical refined thinker. He knew what he meant. Some people did not understood him at all and bothered to argue against him and make arguments that he never had, never believed, and then contradict them. But in fact, if you think carefully, being is being perceived. If you have a being of any kind, a snowball or a lemonade, whatever it is, to have that being is to perceive that being. And you cannot conceive yourself having or knowing a being without perceiving it. Can you? Can I see your head one more? Why are you on silent?
No, what I'm interested in is the difference between without perceiving it.
How could that possibly be? What you're saying is... What? That's a good one. I'd like to drag you out, put a rope around your neck and hang you from the ceiling for a minute. You know, what is logic in your mind that you could logically infer it? What does that mean? You have a word, a logos, and by means of manipulations of that verbal sound, you produce conclusions about something that's not there and positive is there by logic. Is that true? Possibly. And if you agree with it, you agree with the fourth gospel. It says, in the beginning was the Logos, the Word. And without the Word, nothing was made. What was meant there was quite simple. Unless you name your sensum, it does not become a percept. Let's distinguish the sensum, anything whatever that you can feel, sentire to feel. But it does not mean to formulate accurately. It means to be aware, but not of any particular definable. That's a symptom. Now, to turn a symptom into a percept that you can recognize, you must define it verbally. Can anybody smell caramel in the audience now? Is something got caramel? Can you remember the smell of caramel? Some can, yes. Those who try. The awkward squad will. Those who can. And where on earth was that smell of caramel before we named it? Answer, lurking in the infinite field of sentient possibilities, waiting for a name to evoke it. Names evoke mental content. Are we agreed about that? Names evoke mental content. Vocare est invocare. To voice is to invoke. As soon as you name something, let's take a single letter, the indefinite article, A, does it mean nothing? Or does it mean an undefined article, but nevertheless an article? It's got a meaning. You cannot utter a letter, a single letter, without invoking a correspondent for it in your mind. Right, let's go back to oneness again, but it's the most important thing we can think of. Adonai Echad. The Lord is one. He's not one because he's not differentiating. He's one because his differentiations are held together by an active will to unity. Not a sloppy one, like an unbelievable ineffable jellyfish. A oneness of an active will to unity. Allah is one, God is one, Adonai is one. To be at all a conscious being is to be a one. In the act of becoming conscious, you focus. You deliberately try to posit yourself as an observer. One, spelled with three letters. One of which means force, one means form, one means function. In Christianity, that's called Father, Son, and Holy Ghost, or Holy Spirit. Father means power, the will, Son means intellect, logic, and the Holy Spirit is the aggression of activity from the will and the intellect. And those three are never separable, but we can supersess one at the expense of the other two. Or supersess two at the expense of the remaining one. We can do it. We frequently do it. It is the biggest single cause of the world's disgusting present condition. We know we're all in danger of elimination by nuclear weapons, don't we? Who were the men that designed them? Who were the men that made them? Who are the men in charge of them? And do they ask us first? Seriously. Have they gone to the people and said, do you want me? No. Some idiots at some level will say, the voice of the people has declared itself for nuclear weapons, even at the expense of the elimination of the human race, because the alternative is another fellow might eliminate us. There are many countries today quietly working away on nuclear weapons. And when they get one, they will tend to look for an opportunity and an excuse to use it. And that's in Moscow yesterday, when the submarine gets into trouble. No danger. Chernobyl, no danger. Scattergood, called Sellafield now, no danger. Those who pursue power and want power for themselves over other people are utterly lacking in intellectual balance. You can't pursue power over other people if you have any deep logic, because you can't have that power. It's impossible. You can talk about democracy and representative governments and so on to fool people, but you cannot actually get the unity in people. There are a few people in this room now. Imagine if we got in a very large room the total population of the world and put it to them what they would like to be done as the next step of human development. Would we get a unified answer? Well, for instance, would the baby sitting in its nappy be ready to vote? Or would he just say, "Mummy, I want to drink"? And the old man, like myself, who's ready for death anyway, would he care much? Okay, you wish to destroy yourselves by nuclear weapons. What's the difference between that and producing water supply? Or using poison gases? Or the old-fashioned stone with which Cain murdered his brother Abel? What's the difference? Death is death when you get it. We would not find a unity of solution if we got all the people in the world together, because they are not all the same age. How can they? Does a new baby have a vocabulary that can deal with Neil Kinnock or Derek Hatton or Mr. Terry? Have they got the same vocabulary? No. If you haven't got the same vocabulary with identical meaning, how can you possibly agree? First, you must come to terms, and you must exchange terms, and you must define them in such a way that they're acceptable. Remember munitions, munire, acceptable to both sides as instruments of power defense. And if you can't do that, you cannot get the agreement you need in the world, can you? Now, I don't think for a moment anybody here could possibly believe that all the politicking gentlemen of America, Russia, China, Europe could possibly agree about purpose except in one factor. One again. The one factor is they all want their own way. Don't they? Doesn't every individual, in moments of honesty, know he wants his own way? He may think this is a better way than another one way. Nevertheless, it's his own way. He wants as it understands it. So that one is a very, very powerful concept. When we use the word one, let us remember, it's got three letters to spell it, and one means power, one means intellectual form, and one means activity based on those two. If we don't remember that, our action, our function, is bound to be deficient. So if you want to be efficient in any field, in business, in art, in life, you have to come to terms with oneness. Have we got that sufficiently clear for the moment? Oneness is something we must have if we are to be efficient, and it requires us to put together thought, feeling and will. If they are not perfectly balanced, the act cannot be perfectly efficient. For the time being, that will do for one. We now go to two. Now two, you make a mystic sign like that, don't you? Just separate two fingers, look at it and say two. Et two brute. The moment you've got two, that is a one and another one, I think I'll try the pencil. I'll try the thick one. When we write one, we write it like this. Is that visible or is it too light? Can you see it? You're better than I am. Maybe I'm even blinded by the one light. W-A-N. Now that represents one mathematically. It represents one individual, and the individual means that which is in the state of divisibility from another one. Now when we had one, it would have been more correct to draw a circle. I'll do that over there. Because every being that has unity is circumscribed by binding forces. If it is not circumscribed, the energy is floating endlessly in infinity. So really, you should start with a circle and call it zero. And say zero is really number one. Now you know that in mathematics, you start with a zero, not with a one like this one. Now in the ancient world, they said, okay, that is circumscription and that is individuation. The fact that this circle of energy separates the outside from the inside allows us to talk about oneness, unity. This is enclosed. This is energy locked up, trapped. And that is energy free outside. So we want to put that one, which refers to the zero, and it's the discriminating, zealous energy rotation, and the mark of the individual, which strictly speaking is a dot on our letter I, which the Greeks did not bother to note anyway, because they thought if you put the dot there and the fly sits on it, people could misread it. So we put it vertical, it's less easy to misinterpret. And don't bother with the dot. I know one Greek cough who says it's stupid of us to dot the I because the Greeks didn't. In fact, what they did do was extend the I to a line, which was easier to read because of the impurities of early writing materials, and faults and papyrus and so on. Now we're going to put the two together in this form. That means all circumscriptions, and we're taking the dot from there and putting it there. And we now have a peculiar type of two-ness. In this one, when we have the zero only, you know the rest of the diagram, when we have the zero, there is infinity that is not finite, with no definable property, and there is an enclosure which is finite. So the opposition there is between a non-definable infinity and a circumscribed finity there. And it's a bit of a woolly thing to think about, isn't it? Think of an ineffable infinite. Have you got a good image? No. No image is possible for that one. As soon as you make an image, you go on to the dot level. That's the dot. Jesus said, shall not pass away. Shall all be fulfilled. The jot, the letter yod. That tenth letter of the alphabet. Generic to hold. Now, when we put the dot in there, it allows another kind of duality to be examined. That there is a circumscribing force. Remember, we're invoking by the word ideas in the mind. A circumscribing force which is going round the central dot and allows us to contemplate the difference between the dot and the circle. Now when I drew that circle, I had first to put down the pen that made the dot, see? And then push it through space like that until it met itself again. So really the circle was a travelling dot. So now we have a very interesting two-ness. A travelling force, which is called Torah or Rotah, the wheel, and the central static positive hub, the centre of rotation, which itself does not move. Now we can see why it's lucky to know this. everything whatever in the whole of reality, everything, T-H-I-N-G, everything is made of energy rotating around center. The atom, the electron, everything whatever. If it exists as a localizable entity, it is made of a force spinning around the center, and the center is relatively static compared to the spinning motion. So that gives us a very different kind of two-ness to the two-ness we have when we come to with a simple void infinite and a void finite with a dividing line between two voids, one infinite, one finite, dividing line between. It's a bit of a woolly thing. But the moment we say there's a possibility of a rotation around the center, we've got two forms that we can cultivate. This duality is tremendously important. It's a special kind. It's not like the duality that we have in the infinite void and the finite void, with the finite void inside the infinite void, with nothing to divide one from the other, other than our concept that we would like to separate. So we have now a special kind of duality, and that is actually extended into a drawing of an eye, because it represents you, all observers, as central to a universe, a one turn, which they observe from within by projecting their attention outwardly. That dot, remember we had to make a dot to make the circle, projected itself and not round itself like this. One dot, one projection, one going round. That dot projected that circle. That dot is very, very powerful content. In math you have a location without dimension, as in Euclid. First, the dimension is brought into being by an intention of will. But before the intention, there is a location where it may be positive, when you will to positive, but it isn't there until. So it has no dimension, but it is a location in your mind. I'll point to a space in the air, say about 1 yard from my eye. I'm looking at it. I don't see it in there at the moment, but when I look at it there, I could get a bit of wire, put it on the ground, bring it up and wrap it around that. I start with a location with no dimension, and then I wrap around it a piece of wire that's got dimension. So this is a special kind of two-ness. Now at this point I'm going to give a warning. Every concept that admits of a right and wrong use, every concept is helpful and dangerous. Let's have a look. We'll go back to this one. Here, I think we've got some Norse rune specialists in the room tonight. Here is the one individual, and there is another individual, and they can represent individual human beings or any other sentient entities that might exist, like individual angels, individual gods, individual devils, whatever, but individuals. And then we have this, remember, within the circle of existence, we put dots like this, and remember, I'm positioning the dots deliberately to point to point. I'm saying every dot down there is equally valid as posited by the being that posits them. So each one of them, when it superstresses itself and identifies with itself, has validity absolute. Each dot thinks, I'm okay. Now each dot, remember all power is sentient, each dot wishes not to be subordinated to the will of another dot. each individual human being does not like to be subordinated to another being. Just before I came down tonight, I watched about 5 minutes of a nature film in which a cheetah and a leopard were having a difference of opinion about who should eat a gazelle. It occurs everywhere, from the biggest mammoth down to the tiniest subatomic microbe. There is always this, that every duck wants to be the ruler of the other duck to stop them ruling it. And this is represented in this manner. This individual wants him to talk down to that one. But that individual wants him to talk down to that one. Does anybody recognize the north rune that I have drawn? I know what it means. It means mankind. That's a diagram of mankind. Anybody who studied that north system of symbolic language will recognize, oh, there's mankind. Now, why is it mankind? Because every man, like every microbe, wishes to be not dictated to by all the others, and therefore it tends to center itself and treat other beings as peripheral to it. And that is the beginning of all war, all disagreement between all beings. And each being wishes to talk down to the others, to stop the others talking down to that being. And we get a mark there between them, which is a sign of comfort, for the Andrew Cross, isn't it? The George Cross is like this, static. And the Andrew Cross, also called the Whirling Cross, or the Cross of Conflict, is like our letter X, or the Greek chi. Now, it's really a very primitive drawing of two sticks, or staves, striking each other. Now, it means to say, if you look down on other people to stop them dictating to you, don't forget that they're looking down on you to stop you dictating to them. Now, self-reflective consciousness allows you to remember that other people are as likely to want to buff you as you are trying to buff them. There's always the two aspects. One, I'd like to buff everybody, and then mysteriously, it's crazy but true, I'd like them all to love me for my beneficence, my benevolence. I only want to dictate you for your sake, so we can be in harmony. I can't give up my central impulse, whatever I do, and I know you can't. So I know that unless I take very great care, you will dictate to me. But if I try to dictate to you, you will oppose me. Now, where's our heavenly harmony? And this is true. This is the number two, the mark of duality. The mark of two-ness implies it could be cooperation or it could be warfare. That's marked like an X there. It means the possibility of friendship or enmity, both. In primitive European sign language, carved in wood, it meant friendly comradeship, keep your eyes open. Beware of the gift of Trojan horse from Greek. The word gift, G-I-F-T, is modern German for poison. Beware. We know this is true of everybody who examines themselves on the inside. And if they think it's not true, they're either deliberately lying to themselves consciously, which is not too bad, or they're lying unconsciously, which is very bad. to fly unconsciously is to trap yourself in your own verbal structure. That's enough for two for the moment. Two could mean friendship, and it could mean enmity. Now we'll have three. If we do three like this, Roman style, the three, it doesn't show us quite the possibilities that another kind of three does. Take the three sticks and lay them down, and now we have enclosed a triangle that can serve to remind us that we think and feel and will. In the Vatican, that means the Holy Trinity. In all religious systems, the triangle means think it, feel it, will it equally. That's the actual triangle. You don't want a triangle like this. That's my thought. That's my will. And that's my feeling. Can you see that's a funny thing? It's kinetic. And it hasn't got the peace, the stability of that one, has it? Anything less than an equilateral triangle will not do. Now three, and T-R-I, three, and T-R-E-E, three, all come from the same base. The one divine, and that's three, three. And the moment you get this three, you could have a great good fortune. That is to say, you could actually balance your thinking, your feeling, and your willing in perfect equilibrium, and therefore guarantee your efficiency in anything you do. Or you can use that against other people with unbalanced triangles. Remember, everything has a good and a bad aspect. The very thing that would guarantee your unity of thought, feeling, will could be an occasion whereby you take advantage of somebody else who hasn't got that balance. Now, there are two religions in the world. There have been since the beginning of the human race, and they have always fought. And always one has tried to kill the other. And always both have survived. One is called the religion of Cain and the other the religion of Abel. Now one says, I believe as an individual dot that the infinite voidity in which I live and move and have my being has no power over me whatever. I am self-made. And I can utilize the whole universe perfectly without consultation with anyone else. Is that horrible, maybe? No water. Two religions, they've always existed. One is the religion of external ceremonial, and the other is the internal religion of meditation on the ultimate oneness of being. The ultimate not-two-ness of being. The Advaita. The not-two-ness of being. There are two religions. Now one of them has devoted itself to external ceremonial, to garments, to crowns, to mitres, to large sticks, signs of authority, and the other has not had any interest whatever in the external ceremonial, the ritual, because it has been too busy internally with its own relation with the infinite. Let's talk again. There is one religion, and there is the other one. The religion of peripheral extroversion, ceremonial, and the religion of individual self-examination in depth, what today we call depth psychology, in which possibly Carl Jung is a rough approximation, a search for the collective subconscious. If you could call it the pre-collective superconscious, that would have been accurate. But because of the century in which he was born and worked, he wasn't quite ready for that. Infinity in this void space around here is the highest conceivable intelligence and has control over the circle and the dot. La ilaha illallah. There is no worshipable being other than one being. We call it all life, Allah. Allah means an infinite life. The only worshipable being is the infinity of power, consciousness, action. Anything less than that is idolatry. That's rotation down there, let's write rota there. That's the name of this religion. And the name of that religion in there is initiative. That's the dot. It's an initiative religion. Now, in initiation, you do not refer to the external world to decide what to do. You refer to your center. You discover your own personal deep will, and you operate from that, not from an external formal impression of the sense organs. So the rota, which turns into our Hebrew friend, Torah, or a card game, Taro, all the same root, that which returns, that which repeats annually, a ritual round the year, that allows us to observe spring, summer, autumn, winter, spring again, summer, autumn, winter, spring again. And the danger with this ceremonial is that it extroverts your attention, and if you're not careful, takes you off the center of your volitional initiation. Let's be very clear. Two religions. A religion of initiative on the inside, which cannot be touched by the outside, and a religion of external ceremonial, which by its very definition cannot touch the innermost center of the deep will. Now we've got that out of our triangle, out of three. Our number three, which we write like this, is really the same number in a cursive form, like that. And then turned down. The reason why this is so, once upon a time, the whole human race spoke one language and understood what it said to its fellows. But the will to power got into them, and they began to keep secret. And then they took all their primitive sign languages, and they altered them a little, and they turned them round, turned them upside down, left to right, some read left to right, some right to left, some vertically. All to keep a secret from another people beyond your domain. And thus arose secrecy, a misrepresentation, and a multitude of languages, which is called the building of the Tower of Babel. We now look at four. Now with four, we don't have to do one, two, three, four. We can do this like we did with the triangle. And we get a very good sign of a brick that you can build with better. When you build with triangles, you put one there. If you then put another one there, it's not stable there. And if you do this with it, you'll either have to extend again like this and this. You'll always have this lack of verticality here and here. And you could, of course, become a pyramid builder. But if I was an Egyptian type of analysis. But when you have a squared off right angle, stone or brick, you can build buildings, and the vertical is a line pointing directly to the center of the earth. And there is the earth, and there's its center, and here's my building on it. If that building is to be stable, that line we call vertical must point to that center, and so must that. If we put a billiard table on it, put it here, one leg of the table, one leg of the table, for that table to be called flat, it must have an identical curvature of the surface of the earth, and it's still pointing like this. If it were not curved like that, if it was what you call really flat, like this, the billiard balls would collect at the center. A four means establishment of the three in a stable condition. So four is the mark of the true three mason. The other day I saw an interesting film about New Guinea and a marvelous river that is very rough. Did any of you see that film? And it was a very nicely made film, and it showed human beings being defeated by natural forces. But there was another scene, a scene of initiation of young men. And in this, the young men were cut with knives, so the blood ran out of their bodies. And they were told, this blood that is running out of you is the blood of your mother. And you are now released from dependence on your mother. This initiation makes you no longer a child, mother dependent. Now you are a man, free from mother influence. And you are a master of the crocodile. The crocodile was the grandmother. Now those ritual initiations of young boys into manhood all have an equivalent to this. You must break the tie with your mother. The umbilical cord must be cut. I remember on one occasion I had to go to a hospital where a fellow had just been taken in because he pushed his mother downstairs and nearly broke her neck. And I said to him, how did it happen? You're an unmarried man over 40. How did it happen after living with your mother so long, peacefully? How did you come to push her downstairs? He said very simply, like all true crazy fellows, that is truly and with good perception. It was the only time in the whole of my life with her that it happened that when I came out of the bathroom to go in the bedroom, she was at the top of the stairs. And my arm came out. So I said to him, you've read a bit of Freudian psychology, haven't you? He said, yes. I said, would you like to come out quickly? He said, yes. I said, what would you say about your relation with your mother? And he said, she hasn't cut the umbilical cord. And I said, does it matter what she's done if you've cut your end? And he got better very quickly. And we agreed that she'd go out and find a nice woman at his age and with his financial position, that would not be difficult, and get married without telling his mother, and take the bride home and let her deal with the mother. So he actually arrived at home with the new bride that he hadn't mentioned. And behold, peace. There's been no trouble with his brain since, nor with his mother. The lady that married him was so glad to get him, she was kind to his mother. And insured her. When you think in that way, do you know what you're called? Do you know what you're called? Can you guess? You're Duffy. That's where it's from. You're nothing. You're an individual. You're a yod. You're a hand of the absolute. Yad means a hand. Yod is a dot. The yad means an instrument of divinity. Like every Muslim is a kali for Allah. Like every Christian is supposed to be doing the work of God. Like every Hindu is doing the similarly. Apart from sectarian differences. So, four square means you're a mason, a Mars son, a son of your mother, but now you squared yourself up with the realities. When you can actually stand and be kind to your mother, without fear, without bribery, actually be helpful and constructive, you are a true Mars son. Son of your mother. Now your real mother is your very own protoplasm. Mother, M-O, principle of substantiality. Your substance is you. It doesn't belong to your external so-called mother. When you were a baby, you were part of her protoplasm and ovum, part of your father's sperm. These two got together without permission of the mother or the father, and proceeded to grow into a child, but that child made its own placenta. The so-called mother did not make it, the child made it. The child is a parasite on the mother. It is really an independent entity from the moment of that fertilization, male-female. When you thoroughly understand that your external so-called parent is not your mother, call no man father or mother on earth. One is your father, the infinite generative power of the absolute. That's four. Establishment of the three in a stable, unshakable condition so that you can erect in the time-matter world structures of thought, feeling and will which will not collapse. They will be eternal. You will be a true, free Ma son, a free son of your mother. And she will be glad for your sake that you made the break. And you will be glad for her sake that you made it, because you can't be kind to your mother as long as someone hasn't cut the umbilical cord both ends. Now go to five. We could do five like that, or like that. And that's not very helpful. That means developmental power, that's not bad. But better than that. Now that five-pointed star is used in all the major religions to symbolize exactly what your five digits signify, growing out of your palm. I'm going to put little finger there, thumb there, middle finger there. Little finger, Mercury. Now Mercury means commodities, material commodities, the things you need in the material world in order to survive. Put that on your little finger. Hold your hand like that with the fingers equidistant and you'll have these 5 points. Five, the quintessence. You've established your trinity of thought, feeling, will. You have stabilized it on the square by freeing yourself from your external mother influence. And now you're going to do a very clever thing. Handle the commodity external world. Remember you are a living being, circle with dust inside. It's a symbol of the sun. That's your life principle. Put that on your ring finger. And then put the mark of Saturn over your middle finger. Your middle finger means time. Saturn is the lord of time. Look what we've got already. If you can handle the external material commodity world without losing your life in the normal village, only profit you if you gain the whole world of matter and commodities and lose your soul, your life, in the process, won't you? Now in time, you are serially developing one event after another. You have to remember time, because although you're alive being, later that organism will be dead. So remember time and don't waste it. And then, Jupiter. That means expansion, the opposite of Saturn. Saturn contracts in time, focuses on the moment now, and Jupiter reminds you that moment is only one. And there are an infinity of other moments operative elsewhere now in the universe that can impinge upon you. So you must say to yourself, because I exist as a commodity consumer, a food eater, with my life principle in time, I must remember I have to go forth from the particular moment of time into a wider concept of eternity. Jupiter incidentally means God the Father, and Saturn means the devil. The devil that focuses you in time matter makes you forget the infinity which is precipitated in time matter. And then we come on the thumb there, Venus, love. The whole thing is a function there of love. The reason you better to eat food, consume commodities, change your car every 2 years, is so that your life process will be enhanced, that it occurs in time and finites you and slowly ages you and kills you, but you will go out of this world into an expanded world of eternity, because love is a force running all through those others, and the whole of it is based on energy. So we'll put a sign on the planet Mars, which means energy, in the middle. Those five are energy functions. And now we're going to put the moon. There is the black moon, the one you don't see. There is first quarter, first half, beginning to wane, last quarter. We've now got a total mnemonic on that four-pointed star. Tremendously helpful for us. And what are we going to do with six? Well, I'll put it here. I can put six like this. This is our Jewish way of doing it. Six is to remind us that there are two worlds. There is a world of thought, feeling, and will on the inside of our skin, and there's a world of thought, feeling, and will projected outside our skin by the inside. Remember, the dot projected the circumference. And we, from our initiative, deep will, have projected our world. If you think there's a world outside of all of us, which nobody sees, that's very bad logic. The totality of all conceivables is conceived in minds that conceive them. So this one says, remember, there's a world that points upwards, that's vectored towards infinity, and there's a world vectored downwards to the finite. We'll darken this one a bit. That's the time matter world, and this is the half tone world. That's pure spirit, pure spirit, pure spirit. Matter, 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 and the twilight world. And that six pointed star tells us that we live in two worlds, a world inside our skin and a world outside our skin, and the outer is projected by the inner. And if we forget that it's the innermost deep will that projects the external one, we're in trouble. Because then we obey the external stimulus as if it were justified in itself, coming to us from outside with authority over our innermost will. And that's false reasoning. Now we want one for seven. Now the word seven means S even, or spirit even. We have to do this. How many is that? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Is that right? Am I getting it right? 1, 2, 3, 4, 7. Now I'll mark it. There. And there. How do you like messing about like this? 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Is that good enough? You mean to do for me and I've got to do it. And it's better to do for you. Now how do you make a 7-pointed star to that one? Well, what you do is quite simple, actually. You skip 2, yeah? Whereas there, we skip down like that. Now we're going to take that one, that one, that one. Right, 1, skip 2. Skip 2. Skip 2. Skip 2. And it? You like it? Skip 2. Skip 2. Is that right? You see how difficult it is. Shall we try again? It's very hard this year. But I'm telling you what I'm doing now is easy compared to the fact that it corresponds with. What we've got to do is have 7, yeah? And where will they be? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Is that 7? Oh, thank God for that. Now we've got to skip 2 to do it, haven't we? Is that right? No. Help me, please. None of us can do this without the help of everybody. Count that as 1, okay? If I skip 2, where do I go? There? I'll try it. I'm trusting you. Yeah? Now if I skip 2 again, there? Sure? Mm. Is that okay? If I skip 2, is that it? Sure? I'm not. If I skip 2 now, that one, thank you. That's mathematician Greta, it's clear. If I skip 2 again, is that right? If I skip 2 again, I'm going to skip 2 again. Is that right? Thank you for your help. I'm quite serious. No single human being can balance these 7 without the help of every other human being. You saw the trouble I was in and aided. I've been practicing that for 75 years and I still can't do it. But with your aid, and especially Greta's, you know, there's always one person cleverer than another to whom you should go to get help. And do you believe it? Let's go through the 7. Saturn, number 1. focus on a point. Do you like it? Well, what happens? You compress it so it tries to expand. Those two put together cause rotation, which is Mercury. Those added together produce heat friction, which is Mars. Those added together produce the Sun, which is incandescent, and that produces love, Venus. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. We only have one, don't we? What is it? The Moon. And the Moon is said to be the casket that holds the others. Contraction, expansion, rotation, heat generation, illumination, love for enlightenment, with due regard for periodicity of the lunar phasic world. Now when we can do these seven simultaneously, we finish our work. And we cannot do it without each other's help. Lots of men, the anchorites, went in the early days of Christianity in the desert saying, I will get enlightenment far from the madding crowds, ignoble strife. All they got were images of nude ladies in the desert. They all hallucinated. Look at the temptations of the saints in the desert. They're all surrounded by beautiful ladies. They won't go away. They're projections of the thing that was rejected by the saints. That which is rejected comes back. You cannot afford to reject anything whatever from your being. All must be assimilated, all must be affirmed, all must be held and confessed to be part of total unific reality. When you have that, you have seven. S, even. Perfect temperament, perfect spiritual balance. How's that for seven numbers? You don't want me to bother you with eight, do you? I'll do the eight this way and leave it with you. That means the reciprocal relation of all beings whatever. So we'll think about that for a little. But do remember this, you cannot get to the seventh one without free communication with every other human being. And that will open you up to communicate more with each other. Exchange ideas. Somebody's always got something you haven't got that you need. Richard Carlyle once said, when two men meet, they have a duty, either to inform or be informed. Thank you.